You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I'm Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. This is another game day for the Warriors. They won 106-100 against the Phoenix Suns in Phoenix. Strange game. Lots of missed open shots and just kind of just weirdness in this game. And great performances from Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry. So here with me to talk about it is Andy Liu of Warriors World. And the two of us go through a lot of the different possibilities and everything with the game. Conversation runs about 35 minutes. And also, I want to apologize ahead of time. My mic sounds worse because I changed mics, actually, and Skype didn't recognize it, so it used the built-in one. So I apologize for that. It will be remedied. It has already been remedied, but it will be remedied in the future. So thank you so much for listening.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on, Danny, yet again.
Yeah. Well, so this was a kind of an unusual game for me in a different way than the New Orleans game was. What was your biggest takeaway from tonight's weird win?
Yeah, another weird win, or interesting, I guess. The biggest takeaway was Draymond Green decided to play defense, and he's still the anchor for that defense in the middle. He can still protect the rim. He can still rebound. And he still doesn't have any type of shooting ability on offense. But when he's in tune and when he's playing defense, this team is like a whole different animal. They kind of blew that lead that they built up there at the end, that weird final minute or so. But, yeah, man, Draymond still got it on defense, and this team needs it badly, way more, I think, than we could have ever imagined, at least in the regular season so far.
Yeah, that gets into a couple different things I wanted to discuss. Let's give Draymond credit, first of all. For an example, in the second half, you know that I don't love plus-minus, but he was one of five from the field in the second half and was plus 11. And the plus 11 is indicative of how well he played. So, you know, you can deal with that, especially when a team has the stars that they do. But the second part might be more important long term, which is just that Pachulia and West, especially Pachulia, defensively look just, I don't know if it's a step slow, if they look lost or both, but they're just not there.
Yeah, they're just, I mean, at least Kerr's been playing Varejao, so there's that. I guess that's a little bit of a good thing. Looney didn't get any run there until late into the second half. But yeah, Pachulia, West looks much worse, I think, than Pachulia. West can't even move on defense on those pick and rolls, or even getting back on defense when the other team is running in transition, which is like, I mean, like, we're talking about getting back on defense. I mean, that's not even, that's like basketball 101. And then Pachulia either doesn't want to shoot around the basket, Bogut style, or he's making like these weird little nifty passes, which are kind of working, but I mean, just shoot the ball, you're 5 feet away. But yeah, I mean, his defense isn't great either. And it's not like Looney is a great solution. So I think that the Warriors would just honestly just keep struggling at that center position. And on the other side, it's just make more open shots because if they could just make open shots, it glosses over the fact that they're probably not going to get too much help from Zaza and West moving forward here.
Offensively, I'm not particularly concerned. I mean, Steph talked about it after the game with Roz, but really, they're getting... tonight, they got good looks. There were some in New Orleans game as well. Like, that was a difference with the Spurs. They didn't get many good looks against the Spurs, but they're awesome. So, that happens. But today, they got the looks, and they didn't go in, and they still won. So, that's the sort of thing that you can deal with, and you can adjust to. And, you know, Klay was 0 of 6 from 3. They had a lot of point-blank misses. Like, we saw a fair amount of that today, and you know, that sort of thing gets ironed out with time. But like, so the way I'm kind of approaching the offensive stuff is, yeah, the turnovers are a little bit of an issue, and eventually that will reduce. It will still be something, you know. That it wouldn't be the Warriors without some sort of turnover concern. But the other guys, like particularly so the big four and then Iguodala and Livingston, it seems like a lot of their stuff is just figuring stuff out. You know, like there were a couple passes where Draymond just didn't anticipate, you know, where Pachulia was going to be, or Pachulia missed somebody else and that sort of thing. But with the main guys, that's not a problem. Pachulia and West, it's just, are they physically capable of playing in the way that the Warriors want? And that's a bigger question, because if they can't, they don't really have a ton of other options.
Right. It's like, what can they do, right? I mean, that's kind of like my thinking is, what can they do? Even, you know, we thought when they signed these, or when they, when the Warriors had signed these guys for the price tag that they were at, which is, you know, still worth it, considering that, you know, not much went into it, doing 3 mil, for Zaza, and then the Min for West, if I recall correctly. And it's just like, you don't necessarily expect too much, but they do need someone to at least give them mediocre minutes. Do these even count as minutes that are mediocre? The 20 that Zaza giving you, and, you know, the 10 to 15 that maybe David West is giving you? Because that's kind of what you're hoping for. And I think that when the team is struggling like this, like you're saying, like kind of just small little mistakes, like Draymond Green rolling, but Steph thinking he's popping and then, you know, throwing it away, or Kevin Durant getting it to Clay and Clay just missing an open three. Like, those kind of things usually gloss over how not so great these guys are, so that when the shots don't go in, they're not getting stops. So now everything kind of compounds itself, and then it gets uglier, and then these guys just look a lot worse. So I don't think it'll get better. I think it's just the other guys just need to play better, because they're not playing their best. Because I don't think that for West and Zaza, these guys are going to get any better than this, and I guess maybe not any worse.
I think they'll get better just in terms of the mistakes that are being made due to comfort. You know, the ones that are more athleticism and recognition-based, those mm-hmm. might not get better. But just a few, let's say, like cutting down two turnovers a game, or just like a ball that gets stripped, maybe it even stays with the Warriors, but it kind of ruined a good look. That sort of thing will get better. But the other, like, central idea of the Warriors, and I talked a little bit about this, I'm going to write about it too, is the idea that the Warriors don't really need that much in the playoffs out of these guys, but they do in the regular season just to keep the miles off the tires of Durant, right. Curry, Green. So even if, you know, if they can get a little bit less bad than they've been so far, then even just sopping up minutes, and that's also goes to the idea of trying other guys in that. And I don't know if the nature of this, of that kind of personal relationship with Pachulia and David West is that Kerr feels an obligation to play them. And if so, how long? You know, like, do they have, are they basically penciled in for, like, Zaza for the starter's role and X number of minutes a game, David West? Or are they going to be cool with having a smaller role, maybe from time to time, maybe more generally, when other guys are playing better? And they haven't really given the chance for other guys to outplay them. Looney did well against the Pelicans, but other than that, JaVale has had no meaningful minutes. Varejao isn't that good and hasn't really gotten a chance. So I legitimately don't know how he's going to approach that, because Kerr, in general, has been very much about keeping players happy, but these are not guys that have built equity with the Warriors because they're new additions.
Right. Right. No, that makes sense. And he has, well, I have a, I don't even want to veer away from it too much, but I think that he likes playing someone like Zaza and someone like David West because they're able to get the ball in that mid-post area and able to make passes. Someone like Looney and like JaVale aren't able to do that. At least for JaVale, he probably won't be able to. For Looney, at least not right now. And so for someone that isn't able to do that, they're probably only able to just do a pick and roll or a pick and pop. So that runs counter. I think you probably know this, but I don't know the exact stat, but the Warriors don't run. I don't think they're like the highest in terms of how many pick and rolls they run. They're more of a like get the ball in and then run motion off ball, things like that. I think I'm right. Although you can correct me if I'm wrong. But to someone like Looney and JaVale, they're usually just going to be most effective, in my opinion, in just running pick and rolls, which honestly, I think they should just run them more with those guys in. And more athletic, they're able to at least get an offensive or defensive rebound on the other side when they're playing defense. And the Warriors, they're going to get open shots regardless of what system they run. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, it's not like revolutionizing, you know, changing up their entire offense, but it's like, you know, you don't have to get the ball to the center every possession. You know, you don't have to have Steph run off ball, you know, screens every possession. Have KD run more pick and rolls, have Clay, you know, have these guys run more pick and rolls, and just have JaVale and Looney roll to the rim. I mean, you're going to get open shots regardless. And then on the defensive side, at least you'll have more athleticism and more length. But, I mean, it is what it is at this point, I think. I don't know if it's a point worth making.
Yeah, Eric Freeman was kind of, who's writer for Yahoo, was asking the question of, like, what's going on with the Warriors, or, like, who's to blame. And my answer was, give me 2 weeks, because we need to see how they adjust to this. Because if the adjustment is basically do the same thing and it doesn't work, well, then maybe you have to start thinking about changes. But if, you know, like, if they start trying to fiddle with personnel and all that, you don't want to panic. Like, you really don't want to do anything crazy like that.
Right.
My contention, and this is a big concern for the Warriors, is that opponents are not attacking them defensively in the ways that the Warriors are actually weak. Like this, I mentioned this at halftime. If the Suns ran high pick and roll twice as much as they did, they would have gotten so many more buckets just because they couldn't, Pachulia and West couldn't handle it. They were losing Tyson Chandler. They were losing the dribbler, you know, however it worked, there were seams in that. And Phoenix does not exactly have the greatest offense for that for a couple different reasons. I mean, they don't have the only really good screeners they have. Like, I think Chandler's pretty solid and Len is all right. It just depends. He's not the best. He's not my favorite roller in the league, but eventually teams are going to learn that, you know, even though the regular season isn't as much about scouting and, you know, all that sort of like specific game plans for specific teams, that's going to be a problem as soon as opponents figure it out.
Yeah, and it's not like JaVale helps that. Like,
well, a little bit, like, just because he's more athletic. You know, he can physically get from A to B. Like, there were moments with David West where I was sitting there going, even if he read this play right, he wouldn't have gotten there in time. Like, there was one where he was going to try to close out on Eric Bledsoe, and Bledsoe was just gone. And so those sorts of things won't happen. JaVale is, not only is he faster, but he's also longer, and that, most people don't think of it this way, but in certain times, length buys you space, and in other times, length buys you time. So it buys you space. Like, Durant's a great example of this, especially in this game, where, you know, he could be a little bit further off the guy and either get a steal, a deflection, a block, you know, that sort of thing. But it also buys you time, because if your reaction's a little bit late, you just don't have to go as far a distance because your arm just reaches farther.
Yeah, I think we all thought that this was kind of would be like a Boston Celtics type of cohesion, type of fusion that work out quickly. And it looks more and more like it'd be more like the LeBron James Miami Heat 2010, like what's going to happen there, where Coach Spo had, I don't think it's going to be as dramatic to where LeBron has to, or like Pat Riley has to come down and tell LeBron what to do, and then Coach Spo has to figure out to put him in the post, things like that, right? I don't think it's going to be that dramatic. I don't think Draymond is going to shove Kerr on the sidelines, though that'd be phenomenal, that'd be entertaining. I don't think any of that's going to happen, but I do think that you're correct in that 2 weeks, you know, they can keep doing the same thing, they'll figure it out, they'll probably make more shots. But, I mean, there are tweaks to be made that are going to be interesting to see. Kind of sucks to have a calls out. Because he looked good. I mean, Clark is dreadful on defense, man. I thought he looked all right in the preseason. He was really bad last year, so I thought it's coming in, it'd be a little bit better. But, it's still, it's ugly, and Iguodala doesn't have his shot or legs under him. Same with Livingston. Those guys are kind of, you know, coming into the season slow, getting in shape then. So that makes sense. But, and I guess all that coming together is getting us to these points where they're winning single-digit victories against very, very below-average NBA teams. Which I guess makes it more entertaining.
Something I want to give Kerr and the coaching staff a lot of credit for was that Eric Bledsoe's a great one-on-one defender, especially because he's so strong. Steph can't pull off the same things on him that he can on so many other ones. So early on, they ran Curry a lot as an off-ball guy. And so the idea is that, you know, you can't use strength as much off ball, because they're going to call fouls in a way that they don't when a guy has the ball in his hands. And so they used that. Curry scored the first 10 points for the Warriors, and then they didn't go back to it as much, but they did it a little bit later, and that helped unlock him. And it's worth remembering that these guys can be a lot more versatile offensively, and I think we saw a little bit of that from Durant tonight too.
Yeah, Durant was I mean, it's funny. Durant is, for a stretch there, the late first quarter and into really the second half, where Durant was pretty much carrying the entire team on his back, kind of what he would do with the Thunder, which, of course, allowed Hoops Twitter to kind of make fun of, you know, Durant coming to the Warriors to get help. But really, at this point, he's carrying the team through major portions of this early season so far. which is pretty funny stuff. I mean, partially it's true, and the Warriors will figure out later on that on offense it's not going to be this difficult. But yeah, KD really carried this team, both getting to the line. I think he had 12 free throws, which is something that the Warriors will never ever.
He had 16. It was the 16, most. Yeah. It was 16. It was the most since Monte Ellis. Anthony Slater had this stat. It was the most since Monte Ellis back in 2012 for Warriors.
That's a dimension that I think we all knew was going to be there, right? But to see it actually unfold, because it kind of stops the momentum. I'm a person that believes in that, at least believes in the human element, that momentum is real. And so, I mean, he's able to do that, and that's going to be key when Draymond shot is off, which it was. Clay shot is off, and he's not there. So, yeah, I mean, but it is funny that KD is carrying the team with Steph at this point so far.
Yeah, and there was a stretch in the second quarter when they were getting all those shots for Durant, but one of my takeaways was that they also weren't getting to the, I mean, other than Durant sometimes, they weren't really getting to the rim very much. And that is something that should open up with time. It's also something that is helped when you can play five shooters as opposed to, you know, somebody more like Zaza, who the other team doesn't have to guard unless he's involved in the action that far out. Not that he's bad with the ball in his hands, you just defend him differently. And so they will have to kind of piece together when they can get those moments. But I want to go back to something you said earlier, which is that the idea of the Warriors when they're not getting stops. And so feedback loop is a term Seth Partnow's written about it well back when he was at Nylon Calculus. But the idea is basically that it's easier to score after you got a stop, and it's easier to get a stop after you get a score.
Right.
And usually the Warriors are one of the best teams at using that to their advantage and going on runs. However, we've seen a couple times already this year, the Spurs, actually all three games, there have been moments where the opposite has happened, where the other team has gotten a few stops, and then the Warriors' transition D has been terrible so far, and then they go on a run. I think the Suns went on a 16-2 run, and then that expanded to like a 22-4 run or something like that in that first quarter. And you know, those are going to happen at certain points. There's a reason why basketball is a game of runs, is that that is the way that it works a lot of the time. But it's weird to see it from a team that has been stout defensively for all these years.
Yeah, that's pretty much my biggest, I guess, non-concern for this team, is that exact point you're making, is that when the Warriors, when they go on these, and they've really yet to come up with one this season, through three, I can't even think, I've rewatched both games, the first two, and this one, and I can't really think of a big, like, 10-0, 12-0 run that they made that was, like, stop, turnover, you know, transition three, another stop, you know, layup, and then transition three again, you know, something like that. And that really, really hasn't happened because they can't get a stop. And so even when they do, let's say they get one big three, they come back, and the other team just goes straight to the rack, even against their, you know, even against their death lineup, go straight to the rim, scores a layup, and it kind of breaks down from there. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be I think that's the reason why they're fine, is because throughout these past two seasons, they're able to go on those runs, and three games doesn't necessarily unravel those two seasons, especially when you add someone like Durant. And so I think that makes sense. And I think they need a cathartic moment, these guys. They need one because it hasn't happened yet in the regular season where they're just like everything is cooking and everything is working out. Now, maybe it happens on the road. Maybe it happens against Portland, who's probably going to want to play up and down with them. Maybe it'll happen at home just because it's more comfortable. They're able to run around and do crazier things, and then maybe it'll work out. But they do need that moment where they're like looking at each other like, okay, this is going to work out. You know, we know it's going to work out, but we're actually in it now. We actually feel it. We actually made these couple threes. We're able to actually get stops here. And turn this game from like a 5-point lead to a 25-point lead, which is what they're used to doing, you know, in the past two seasons. So I think that moment is coming, and I think these guys need it at this point because they're really kind of slogging through these victories so far.
They are, and there are a lot of things to look for in the Portland game, and one of the biggest for me is how they choose to defend Damian Lillard. So with Lillard, normally, like let's say it was a playoff series, you probably put Clay on him and put Steph either on CJ or just one of, you know, Harkless or whoever their other dude is. But, you know, it's a regular season game. Maybe you don't go through that as much. But then the other thing you can do is you can trap, let's say it's a Lillard-Plumlee pick and roll. You can trap Damian Lillard after that. But that requires that kind of scramble communication defense from the remaining three guys that we haven't seen a whole lot this year. And so I'm excited for that game just because it brings a challenge that will be clarifying. You know, the Pelicans are an unusual team because they're, at this point, they're so dependent on Anthony Davis. And then the Suns really were egalitarian to a point in this game. You know, it felt like Bledsoe and TJ Warren, well, TJ Warren got like 21 shots up, but it felt like they could have shot more. Like they could have been more aggressive than they were. And they just were balancing it out. And they had some, at their best moments, they had some really nice lobs. So getting to a team that really runs a foundational component and just does that again and again will be more of a, let's call it, traditional challenge for this team.
Yeah, it's going to be one of those games where the Warriors are just going to, I think the Blazers are going to want to fight fire with fire. So that might be able to unlock that type of crazy environment that the Warriors thrive in. And yeah, I mean, it's crazy that I think that if they lose Steph, that's their biggest concern, you know, that's the guy that they can't really live without. But then when you watch these games over and over again, you're like, man, they really can't lose Draymond, can they? Like, they really can't lose him in the middle. Even with KD's length, even tonight when KD has several different, you know, stolen passes and tips, just on the fact that he's like 7'5". But Draymond in the middle is still the best rebounder, honestly, like by far. Just the way he can go between people and how physical he is, and then him pushing the ball and passing. When he's on the way he was in the second half tonight, he's still ridiculous. That shot maybe might not be so great though.
And he can contribute in other ways. And one of the major things about having the firepower they have this year compared to last year, I mean, the difference between Barnes and Durant beyond defensive ceiling, which we won't really see during the regular season, is just the idea of that they can carry the team. Barnes did an admirable job for long stretches of maximizing the opportunities that were in front of him. You know, if they gave him a corner three, he'd hit it enough at the time. But if Draymond's shot isn't falling, if Klay's shot isn't falling, they can survive that in a way that they couldn't have last year. And that's something we saw, like, even in the finals, you know, Steph being 70-80% of himself. There just weren't enough guys that could create. And Durant getting to the line is a major change. And also, you talked about his length. I mean, Durant, when we're looking more at the end game, the idea of Durant and Draymond, just like the rim protection that they can provide right now, I mean, I'd say that's their best rim protection combo that they've actually given minutes to.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You can see guys actually seek out going to the rim against Zaza, especially in transition. One, he's not even able to get back, and two, he's not ever going to actually block a shot. So, a lot of the times with rim protecting, you don't even need to block the shot. You just need to be able to get there and stand between the person and the rim and just do like a what's that, verticality, which is what Draymond is incredible at. And that's really all you need. And that's the problem with the Bucks, because they can't even get there in the first place. So you're not really protecting anything if you're not even ever in between the rim and the person. I want to see Ludi play more. I want to see JaVale, even though it might not work out, which, you know, maybe it won't, but it's hard to watch those bigs, man.
Yeah. Broadly speaking, and there are, of course, exceptions to this, many, many exceptions to this, altering shots and deterring shots are more important than actually blocking them, because you get guys to take to make worse decisions, and also going for blocks as much as, like, let's say Hassan Whiteside does. You know, of course, that can scare opponents and everything like that, but it also puts you out of position for rebounds and all that. And when the Warriors are playing small, going for blocks doesn't really suit them, because there aren't enough guys to get the board in case the defender does his job and forces the miss. And so they need to kind of get that balance right, and they probably will. I mean, that is one part of this that they absolutely can do better. I'm going to give you a small stat just because I happen to be on this page doing prep for my athletic pieces. While he's only played 27 minutes, the Warriors have played at their fastest pace with David West on the floor.
What?
But that also might just be that the opponents are scoring so fast. Because that can't happen. Like, you can't actually see pace be affected by how a team defends, and that, you know, if the other team is doing that, or maybe they're just getting a few. But it's close. You know, it's not like he's miles ahead of anybody else.
That 3-point shot that he had today was pretty funny.
Oh man, he was. I would love to get one of the assistant coaches, whoever deals with him, on Truth Serum to ask how many of those he's making in practice. Because, you know, back in the day in 2013, Draymond just started basically gunning 3-pointers in the Nugget series. And I actually asked Mark Jackson, I'm like, why is he doing this? And Jackson said, well, he's confident in it and he's been making them in practice. So you're kind of like, oh, okay, you know, maybe he's just better than he's shown. David West hasn't really done this in his career. And that shot was even worse, because he took it really early in the shot clock. I think it was 18 seconds or so. And you can usually do better than that.
Yeah, he didn't have his feet. He didn't really have his feet set. He kind of walked into that one. It was kind of like a Draymond trail three, actually. Which Draymond was all right at, which is, that kind of speaks to the next point, which I have, was I don't actually mind Draymond just jacking away, just shooting threes. Maybe not the ones where he drives to the rim and is pretty out of control, but I don't mind him shooting more than threes, even early in the shot clock. The thing with Dre is that he's such a rhythm player, like, so much. This team is kind of like a rhythm team, I think, just on the fact that they shoot so many jumpers. So it's kind of hard for them to just come out and just even though, you know, they are the best shooters in the world, but especially with Draymond, once he hits that first three, he just feels good. And he's just out there playing, and he's not really thinking. And the thing with him, when he's thinking, he's pretty below average, starts making really random decisions, like the ones where he was, you know, had him in transition, threw it to the sideline for a turnover there, I think late in the first quarter, which is pretty awful. But when he hits his first couple of shots, he has this rhythm, compounded with the fuel he has for the game, it works out. And I think it took him a while. I don't think he was good in game one. It was all right in game two, and then it got really all the way until the second half of this game for him to really show up. And no matter how many points these guys score, they'll need him to actually be that you know, defensive player that he needs. And I guess I've spent about 10 minutes of the spot now just talking about Draymond. But
He deserves it. I mean, especially when his stat line wasn't like KD's. I mean, Durant was ridiculous in this game. But right. Draymond, offensively, the bigger issue might be just that he doesn't look comfortable or fluid on drives. The shot's gonna do what it's gonna do. Like, that's just the way it is for him. But generally, if he can have the ball in his hands and just kind of make his way towards the cup, he'll either make the right pass, he'll get fouled, maybe he'll get a layup, just depending on how it all works out. And there were a lot of times in this game where he just struggled to kind of figure out what he should do with it. It's not necessarily what he did do. Like, he had, maybe it was just Alex Len's kind of an unusual guy. He's not super thick, but he moves relatively well for his size, and so maybe he thought Len wasn't going to get there, and he did. And so there were times where he was probably expecting the foul, but since Len was there, you're not going to call a foul on a guy who's in position generally in that spot. And that should come with time. I mean, that would be the expectation because he's a smart player and he's done it for years. So I'm not as concerned about that part of it, you know, but also, you know, like, there is this idea, it was one of the biggest things that Kerr imparted to the Warriors when he took the job, was that they had too low of standards in terms of what was a good shot. And, you know, under Mark Jackson, you know, those deep twos, those, you know, post-ups with 18 seconds left on the shot clock, you know, all those kind of things, they were good. They were okay. You know, you could deal with that. And it took probably until about February of the year they won the title for guys like Clay and even to a point Steph to realize, oh, we can do better than this. And that's the equilibrium you want to reach for Draymond on threes, but it's really hard to do that with him because if he sees it and he thinks about it, that's not a good thing.
Right. Yeah, that's when it goes downhill for someone like him. That's when you start thinking and you're not just out there playing, you know, and that is, like, you know, not the core of the dysfunction, but really most of the disagreements that he has with Kerr. And this is going to be a fun season. So this is game three and we've got 79 left to go. And a lot of Warriors fans that I know, a lot of Warriors fans that I follow, a lot of people that cover the Warriors are already going at Steve Kerr for the rotations that he's had, for the things that he's done. So it's going to be fascinating the way Kerr had that one season where he won the championship, best coach in the league. I thought he was one of the best coaches in the league. Last year, he was great again all the way until the finals where he made some decision to cost the team title. And now this season, with the expectations this high, it's going to be interesting to see the way people view Kerr. Because, again, I mean, we don't know. We're not in the film room. We're not breaking down the X's and O's with these guys. So we don't actually know what they're trying to do. All we're able to do is, you know, kind of see the results of what happens on the floor and kind of project and guess what these guys want to do. So it's going to be fun to see how much slander, how much, you know, blame that he gets, you know, the more the team struggles or when they win. It's going to be interesting regardless.
Kerr has done a great job of keeping players happy and putting a kind of a system in place that is more demanding of them, you know, especially offensively, just forcing them to make better decisions. But rotations were always something that was never, like, that wasn't really a strength for him. I mean, he had those weird things where he didn't trust his bench, especially after that game against the Suns early in his first year. And so the starters just played more minutes, and then in the idea that he has certain guys that he's very comfortable with, so he would play Varejão in the finals is the most obvious one, but there are a lot more, Azeli in game seven, you know, all those sorts of things. And that could get better with time, but it's not necessarily sure. I mean, Greg Popovich is probably the greatest coach of all time. He's not particularly great at that either. It's just that he has amazing benches all the time. And RC Buford, their GM, and everything else, they've done an amazing job. Like, there was that weird game against in Game 7 against the Clippers 2 years ago. He pulled Kawhi because he, like, blew a switch. and then he was out for, I think, like 6 minutes, and that sort of thing, just to send a message to the guy who won Defensive Player of the Year. So, no coach is perfect, and part of the fun of all of this is just seeing what somebody does well and what somebody struggles with, and the idea that nothing is permanent. So he can get better at that. I mean, there's been some talk around, you know, media that Mike Brown has more involvement in rotations and all that, so we'll see if that bears any fruit. But
yeah,
it's exciting to have a team, and this is something you and I have talked about before, I think on the show, but also definitely off, is to have a team that won 73 games and, you know, nearly won the title, and won the title the year before, but have this much uncertainty and this much to talk about this early in the season is pretty awesome for us.
Yeah, I don't know how we're going to get through that. I don't know how we're going to get through all these games. I was under the slight assumption that the Warriors would make this season a little bit boring by just coming out and blowing teams out by about 20, like they did last season. That is not going to be the case. We have storylines across every single game here going forward, and I think that, I don't know, I guess this is a good question, you know, final question or something like that, but how many games do you think they figured out in the regular season? Obviously, different story in the postseason, different type of play, right? But how many games do they take to figure this out and then get comfortable and then start to look like who we think they are, at least for this season?
There is no real set rule on it. I mean, it took Miami more than a year. I've used the idea of 2 months, so, you know, around New Year's as being a time that they'll really start to figure it out. But I didn't expect the defense to be like this. Like, that for me, the 2 months was more about knowing where guys want the ball, you know, making the right passes, guys cutting at the right times, all that sort of stuff. It wasn't, we're not getting back on defense, we're blowing these pick and roll coverages, that sort of thing. Because that is, you have a longer issue because there is some part of it that is diagnosis, that is, okay, what's going wrong? And then fixing it and all the, and then implementation. Whereas offensively, I think they know what they want to do. It's just taking some time to get it right.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. I wish we were like 10 more games in, so I had a bigger sample size. At this point,
we'll get there. That's the other part of this that's very important to remember is that, you know, exhibit patience. This always takes time. And while there was continuity in terms of like the three All-NBA guys and everything like that, almost everybody else is like in a different role or a different situation. Like Sean Livingston, yeah, he's playing similar minutes and all that, but he's playing with Kevin Durant, which is a very different role than he had before. You know, a guy who wants the ball in his hands a lot, who's very good with the ball in his hands. You know, like, it's going to take those guys a long time to figure it out too. And Andre, I think that he's in the right place a lot of the time. He just has been missing those shots.
Yeah, it's fascinating because I used to be, and I was talking to Sam and then Sam Esmediari and Jacob Greenberg as well. It's fun because I used to be a really, really hardcore Warriors fan growing up. And nowadays, you know, covering the team in the last like 3 or 4 seasons, kind of less so just because, I don't know what it is.
It changes your relationship with the team. It does.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way it is. I mean, even if you don't feel objective just in that, like, you know, the old timey hat with the bill and, you know, with the notepad in it kind of journalist, that is just the way you are, partially because you're not allowed to cheer in the press box, partially because it's just like you're talking to the guys in the locker room, and it's a different dynamic. And that's also one of the things that's weird for me, like the two of us that are different, is that I used to cover the Niners and Giants, who I grew up a fan of, but I didn't grow up a big fan of the Warriors. So it was always easier to make that transition than it was for the Giants or the Niners, where I would just get sad when they lost.
Yeah, I think, it was like, even the Game 7 loss, it was kind of like, I mean, it was kind of sad, but I knew that if this happened like 5 years ago when I was in high school or college or something, I would be like depressed and like crying or whatever right?
Did you think about how great a story it was too? Like, that was one of the things that got to me. It's like, oh, it's sad for the Warriors, it's sad for their fans, but wow, what a story. And that's like, that was kind of a change.
Right, yeah, it was like, it didn't come up first, but like after a couple minutes, I was like, look, I mean, LeBron just came back 3-1, and you know, and won it for the city of Cleveland, you know, he promised him a championship, and he got it done the first year, or at least the second year that he came back. So yeah, I mean, it's more like, everybody kind of gives a bad connotation about narratives now, which is kind of annoying to me, because I love narratives. It's just like, the narrative to every story or to every season or anything like that, it kind of takes precedence over whether the team that you root for wins or loses. At least, you know, even for me, I mean, obviously, you know, want the Warriors to win. It's more fun that way. But if they lose, I mean, the story is going to be great regardless. So I guess that's just what I was saying. Like, I don't know if I can handle 70. I don't think I can handle 79 more games, but it's going to be great covering the team now that they're not as boringly awesome as we thought they were.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Thanks so much for taking the time.
All right, Danny, appreciate it.
Thanks again to Andy Liu for taking the time to come on. You can read him at Warriors World, and you can also follow him on Twitter at Andy K H Liu. That's A-N-D-Y, the letter K, the letter H, L-I-U. And one other stat that I wanted to throw out there, just because it blew my mind when I was kind of compiling stuff for the Athletic pieces, is that Kevin Durant only touched the ball 56 times in this game. He had 36 points, and he also passed it 25 of those times. So he only really held it, if you want to call it that, 31 times, got 36 points out of it, which is absolutely incredible. And some nights the Warriors are going to need that kind of production from him. So good to have him, obviously. And a big performance in the sense of knowing that he can do that for this team when absolutely necessary. And that big stretch when Curry went out with foul trouble and Durant helped keep them in it, and then he carried them in the second quarter as well. So a notable performance for him. Steph, Draymond's defense in the second half was great, and a lot of good stuff going on. For those of you who enjoy reading my work, you can check out The Athletic. I will have a player-by-player review out tomorrow morning, and then a game analysis out tomorrow afternoon at some point. And then there will be a new podcast on Tuesday, and then Tuesday is also the big Warriors-Blazers game, and I think I have a guest, but I'm not completely certain for Tuesday's episode. Either way, can make it work. If you have any feedback, other than the mic thing, because obviously I know about that, and I do appreciate any other feedback, and you can reach out to me various ways, at Danny LaRue on Twitter, DannyLeroux, DannyLaRueNBA@gmail.com. I have a Facebook, Locked On Warriors has a Facebook, Danny LaRue, Locked On Warriors, Locked On Dubs on Twitter. And then if you want to send stuff to the show, for whatever reason, if that makes you happy, you can send it to LockedOnWarriors@gmail.com. Everything forwards to the same place to make sure I don't miss anything, but it will note that, so then I can kind of keep it in a different place mentally. So I really do appreciate all that. If you support this show or any other podcast you like, please subscribe, download every episode, leave a rating, leave a review. That all that stuff is very important because people care, sponsors care, all that sort of stuff. And so very excited to be a part of the Locked On Network. Also, since the Niners were off, thankfully, on this week, if those of you who want to hear the Niners, I'm sure John's doing some great podcasts on Locked On Niners, but that was a crazy, shocking Raiders game. I caught the end of it and little bits and pieces throughout. And so you can definitely check out Locked On Raiders, a great resource for those of you who are into football and really any other NFL or NBA Locked On. We have a very good group of people doing high quality analysis on every NBA and NFL team. So I highly encourage you to check it out. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.